Welcome to episode 97 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of May 19th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, bike sales are on the rise just like gas prices. A crash in Sydney involves 50 cyclists. Pro cycling news, Pataki banned for doping, and you too can have a jet engine for your bike on eBay. Following that, an interview with triathlon world champion Chris McCormick, a couple of upcoming rides, and a special shout out to a special lady. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammered, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thank you so much for your PayPal donations. They do keep the show in bandwidth and hosting and all of those items that we need to keep the show going. For more information on donating to the show, go to www.thefredcast.com and click the donate link on the left-hand side of the page. Thanks again for your donations. They are greatly appreciated. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast, and I hope that you enjoyed this week's edition of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. If you're not subscribed to it, go ahead and check it out at www.the-spokesman.com. We talked about a lot of great stuff, including National Bike Month and Bike to Work Week, which was last week. We hope you all got involved in that. A little bit of audio love for your ears while you were waiting for the Fredcast to come back. Well, one of the things that is going on right now that I want to remind you about before we get into the news, and there is a lot of news this week, is our 100th episode contest. It is still going on, and I love going to my P.O. box because when I go there, I pick up, well, usually two things. One, a huge stack of postcards from all over the place with all of you who are entering the contest. I've got, I don't know, there's a lot of postcards sitting here, so I think the odds are getting tougher and tougher to win. But then the other thing I pick up is a bunch of packages from some of our contest sponsors. And those sponsors include Training Peaks, Polar Pack, Spot, Erg Video, iBike, Road Rash Repair Kit, Dave Shields and Saul Raisin, Ride Clean, Cycle Film, and Nike. There is still time for you to get in on this contest. Make sure you send in your postcards. All the details are on the website at www.thefredcast.com. And up at the top of the page, click the tab that says Contest. Remember, we will be accepting postcards up until we release show number 99. This is show number 97, so you've got two more to go. So get your postcards in and get entered into the Fredcast 100th episode contest. Also, before we get into the news, remember that I told you that the Fredcast Transalpine Tour has been canceled for this year. However, we will be going to the French Alps in August to climb some of those great Tour de France climbs. You can join us. I've got a link in the show notes to the Hendrix Tours website where you can sign up to join us on this great trip. We're going to be audio podcasting, video podcasting, riding our legs off, and just having a great time in the French Alps in August. If you'd like to join us, either send me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com or click on that link in the show notes. Get all the information at Hendrix Tours and join us in the French Alps this August. By the way, we are in planning and negotiations for next year's Fredcast Tour, and I will have more information on that in coming days. Topping off the news this evening is a story that probably a lot of us who ride on the road can in some way or another relate to. It involves a pack of about 50 cyclists who were riding in Sydney, Australia about 2 weeks ago now, when a car came up rather closely behind them. You're probably familiar with this happening where, well, the motorist just feels that you have no right to the road. The guy came up very close behind the back of the pack. The stories say that it was worrying the back of the pack. He then sped around the pack, went up in front of everyone, and according to the accounts of the cyclists, including two professional cyclists, those being Kate Nichols and Olympic hopeful Ben Kirsten, according to all these cyclists, the individual involved in the car was in front of the pack and then slammed on his brakes, causing all 50 of these cyclists to, in one way or another, have to take evasive action, or they went down. Luckily, nobody was seriously injured, but you can imagine the uproar that it caused. Now, following all of the uproar that occurred, the individual who was involved in the crash decided that he was going to hold a bit of a press conference in which he said, "I'm not a cyclist hater. I'm not nothing. I was just driving along and I had a car failure, and now I'm in trouble. I don't know. I pulled over. I had time to put my hazard lights on, put it in park, go to start it in petrol, and half a dozen, maybe 15 cyclists rode past me, and then all of a sudden, one or two went bang, bang into the back of my car. They're all looking at me like I'm an idiot and calling me names. I thought, I'm not getting out of the car with 50 blokes wanting to hit me, and I just drove off." Meanwhile, cyclist Kirsten called the TV station almost immediately after the incident in which this guy denied doing anything wrong, and she was quoted as saying, "Mate, you're a lying dog. You're a liar, and you're going to get caught for it. You were doing 60 kilometers an hour and then stopped to zero. What you did was ridiculous." She went on to say, "Who takes off after they accidentally cause such damage? Who isn't remorseful?" I think the bottom line and the lesson that we can learn from this incident is what I tell people when I give safety presentations on cycling all the time, and that is, expect the unexpected when it comes to motorists. Unfortunately, there's a lot of motorists out there who simply don't like the fact that we are on two wheels, that we don't have a motor, and that we are on their roadways. Keep that in mind. As a matter of fact, you know, we talked to Rick Smith, the creator of the Yehuda Moon comic strip a couple of weeks ago, and there's a great comic strip from a few days ago in which both Yehuda and Joe are out on their bikes and somebody starts to yell something at them, but they can't quite make out what it is that they're saying. And I've run into that time after time. When somebody just rides by you, you are as far to the right as you could possibly be. You're riding a straight track. You're riding with traffic, following the rules, but there are just people out there who want to scream at you simply because you're out there on the road. The bottom line of all of this, be safe, stay cool, do the right thing, and always expect drivers to do and act in an unexpected way. Meanwhile, as motorists get mad at us for being out there on the road, all of us who at one time or another, whether we drive a car for dozens or hundreds of miles a day, or if we just drive 1 mile a week, we are all being bit hard by the dramatic rise in gas prices. Price of a barrel of oil has more than doubled in the last year, and you know what that means at the pump. Meanwhile, last week was Bike to Work Week because May is, of course, every year National Bike Month. And one of the things we talked about in the spokesman earlier this week was the fact that this is probably the single most talked about Bike to Work Week any of us can remember. Whether it was in the blogosphere, the Twitterverse, or just simply with people that we know or driving down the street and seeing banners in the cities and towns in which we all live, Bike to Work Week is huge this year. And along with that are bicycle sales. News reports from all around the country are indicating that bike sales are going up to match the rise in gas prices. Now, this could simply be because of the fact that gas prices are on the rise. It could be because people are fed up with traffic. It could be because people are going green and trying to do a little bit more for the environment, a little less carbon and a little bit more lactic acid instead. Whatever the reasons, bike sales are up nationwide, and undoubtedly we'll be seeing by the end of the year, we'll be hearing from the National Bicycle Dealers Association and Fred Clements, and we're all going to be hearing how good a year this was for the bicycle industry, despite what many people are saying is an economic downturn in many parts of the country and indeed in many places where this podcast is heard. So for those of you who are bike dealers, it's probably great news. For those of you who are cyclists and cycling advocates, even better news. Bike sales go up, more people biking, less people driving. Well, with bike sales on the rise, it's probably a great time to open a bike shop, especially if you're probably the world's most famous bicycle racer. And of course, we're talking about none other than Lance Armstrong, because Lance Armstrong's bike shop in Austin, Texas is now open for business. The shop, called Mellow Johnny's, and I'm told that's Texan for Mayo Jean, is now open. And customers are going to find a wide range of products from people like, well, can you imagine, Trek, Oakley, Giro, Bontrager, and Nike, as well as plenty of other brands as well, including our good friend Tim Jackson's Mozzie Bicycles. If you're interested in finding Mellow Johnny's, it is in Austin, Texas, but of course, there's a link in the show notes to the website where you can get all the information, including phone number and hours of operation. If you find yourself in Austin, Texas, and have a feeling this is going to be a bit of a pilgrimage of sorts for lots of cycling fans, go ahead and stop in, and it's okay if you're on your bike, because in addition to the normal sales and service areas that you're going to find there, you're also going to find a training facility, showers, locker rooms, and free bike storage for not only commuters, but also those visiting the attached coffee shop. Go ahead and check it out. The link is in the show notes. Well, it's been a little while since we've given you some race results, so we're just going to go really quickly through these so that we can get to the show and, of course, to our interview at the end of the show with Chris McCormick. It's a bit long, and I want to make sure that you've got the time to listen to it. So first of all, let's go back in the Pro Tour to April 5th through the 29th and the Tour de Romandie. Now, of course, the Tour de Romandie is only a six-day race, and it goes through the rolling hills of the French-speaking region of Switzerland. And this year's Tour of Romandie was won by Team Astana's Andreas Klöden, and he won after the final stage, the 154.2-kilometer stage from Les Bovarets to Lausanne. That stage was won by Italian Daniele Benati of Liquigas, who won it in a sprint finish just ahead of Marcus Zberg from Switzerland and Kazakh rider Maxim Iglinski. Now, Andreas Klöden took the title ahead of Czech rider Roman Kreuziger of Liquigas, who finished just 35 seconds behind Andreas Klöden, and 43 seconds back in third place was Team Highroad's Marco Pinotti of Italy. Meanwhile, while Andreas Klöden was racing at the Tour of Romandie, there was also the one-day Amstel Gold race. This was on April the 20th, and this one was run by Damiano Cuniego, who won the 258-kilometer race, well, really right at the end, in a final sprint up the Kauberg, which is well known in this race as being a killer. And he won it just ahead of Frank Schleck from Luxembourg, and in third place, Alejandro Valverde. Fourth went to David Rebellin, and in fifth, Rabobank rider Thomas Dekker. With the Tour of Romandie and Amstel Gold in the history books for this year, our Pro Tour standings right now are: in first place, Damiano Cuniego from Italy; in second, Andre Greipel from Germany; and in third, Alberto Contador from Spain. As far as the team standings, Astana is sitting in first, Castapagna is in second, and Team CSC is in third. As for the national standings, Spain is sitting in first, Italy in second, and Belgium is in third. The next Pro Tour event is actually going on right now. It's the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya. This takes place May the 19th through the 25th. The prologue time trial and stage one were both won by Tor Husoft, and stage two, today's stage two, was won by Cyril Dessel of France and the AG2R team. As the result of his big win today, Dessel is sitting in first place in the general classification, followed second by Rémi Pariol from France and Crédit Agricole, and in third, Jaime Zubeldia from Spain and Team Euskaltel. On the next Fredcast, I will have the final results of this year's Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, and we'll see whether or not that makes any change in this year's Pro Tour standings. After the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya, the next two Pro Tour events are the Criterium de Dauphiné Libéré, which takes place June 8th through the 15th, traditionally used by Lance Armstrong and several others as the traditional tune-up to the Tour de France. And following the Dauphiné Libéré is the Tour of Switzerland, June 14th through the 22nd. Now, of course, the other major race that's going on right now is the Giro d'Italia, one of the famed three grand tours, the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España. Giro d'Italia, the Tour de France, and the Vuelta are not in the Pro Tour calendar this year, and that's why you won't be hearing about anyone who wins one of these major tours catapulting ahead of others in the Pro Tour standings. They simply are not in the Pro Tour this year. Interestingly, while the Tour de France has decided not to allow Astana to race in their event, Astana did get an invite to this year's Giro d'Italia. Another major team that also got an invite and which came into this race ready to win was Team Slipstream Chipotle. As a matter of fact, they won the opening team time trial of this year's event. That meant that going into stage two of this year's Giro d'Italia, wearing the Maglia Rosa or the pink jersey of the race leader in the general classification, it was American Christian Vandeveld of Team Slipstream Chipotle. Well, there have been a number of casualties in this year's race, including America's Dave Zabriskie, who crashed out in the second stage of this year's Giro d'Italia, so he's out of the race. Meanwhile, Alberto Contador from Team Astana, he's got a broken arm from a crash that he suffered in the eighth stage of this race, but he is still racing. And meanwhile, current race leader Giovanni Visconti was taken to the hospital today for x-rays on his left elbow and his right wrist after a crash during today's 11th stage. Nevertheless, Visconti got back on his bike and was able to finish with the peloton in order to retain his lead in the general classification. So today, after 11 stages of the 2008 Giro d'Italia, sitting in first place in the general classification, it is Giovanni Visconti at 49 hours and 17 seconds. Second place, Gabriella Bosisio from Italy, 5 minutes 50 seconds back. In third, Alberto Contador, 6:59 back. In fourth, Marzio Brusegin from Italy, 7:52 back. And in fifth, Germany's Andreas Klöden, 7 minutes and 54 seconds back. The Giro goes all the way through June the 1st, and we will have more results for you next week right here on the Fredcast. Now, speaking of the Giro d'Italia, you all know that last year in the 2007 Giro d'Italia, Alessandro Petacchi won 5 stage wins in that race and was one of the most dominant riders in the race. Unfortunately, he has now been stripped of those 5 stage wins because the Court of Arbitration for Sport has determined that he is guilty of a doping offense. This doping offense is a result of last year's Giro d'Italia when he tested positive for the asthma medication salbutamol. Now, Petacchi had a waiver that allowed him to use salbutamol during a race to treat his asthma. However, because the amount of salbutamol in his blood was slightly elevated above the amount that is allowed by the UCI rules, non-negative test, meaning that while they knew that the salbutamol would be in his blood, it wasn't exactly a positive doping test. Now, the Italian Cycling Federation cleared him of all charges. Nevertheless, the Italian Olympic Committee, supported by the World Anti-Doping Agency, brought the case to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and he was indeed found guilty of a doping offense. However, in the words of the statement from the Court of Arbitration for Sport, quote, considering that the athlete bears no significant fault or negligence, the CAS panel has fixed the period of his ineligibility to 1 year. As a result of this sanction by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, his team Milram said that they decided to cancel his contract after this result from the Court of Arbitration for Sport. According to Milram General Manager Jerry Von Gerwen, quote, all infractions of internal rules are the object of a sanction, and this is also true for Alessandro Petacchi. Okay, if you will allow a little bit of editorializing here, I think you all know how I feel about doping. I've made it very clear my stance on doping in professional cycling. This case, however, I think that Alessandro Petacchi is getting a bum rap. The bottom line is the guy has asthma. He's still one of the best sprinters that's ever been in professional cycling. And the fact that he is able to perform that well and have asthma, and the fact that he had a waiver from the UCI to use this medication, should be enough to allow him, if he made a simple mistake in this case, to continue cycling. And especially, he should have the support of his team in a case like this. So on this case, I've got to come down on the side of Alessandro Petacchi. I think he's getting a bum rap, and I can't wait for him to get back to cycling in order to show the world what he can do. Okay, I've got a product recall to tell you about this week, and this one is for indoor trainers, both from NASHBAR and from Performance. The NASHBAR trainers are the 2008 Travel Track Gravity Inertial Trainers, and about 200 of these were sold. Meanwhile, the performance trainers, there were about 3,000 sold in 2007 and 2008. These are the TravelTrack Inertial, TravelTrack iForce Wireless, and TravelTrack Millennium iForce trainers. In both cases, the issue is that the springs in the resistance units could unhook and become a projectile, either posing a puncture hazard for your rear wheel or perhaps causing injury to nearby bystanders. Now, neither NASHBAR nor Performance have received reports of injuries, but they have each received three reports of springs releasing from the bike trainers. In each case, you should immediately stop using the trainers and contact either NASHBAR or Performance to receive a free repair or refund. And I've got links in the show notes to both companies' recall notices so that you can get all of the contact information that you need in order to get your trainers taken care of. The nice thing is, in most, well, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, it is indeed springtime and you're probably not using your trainers. So even if you've got to repair them, you won't mind. But for those of you in the Southern Hemisphere, unfortunately, you're going to have to get yours fixed before you can get back on them. Go ahead and check it out in the show notes, www.thefredcast.com. You may recall a while back that I mentioned the possibility that USA Cycling might be leaving the city of Colorado Springs, Colorado, to look for a new home. One of those places that was rumored was right here in Utah in Ogden, which is a growing community and a growing community for sports-based businesses. Well, last week, the CEO of USA Cycling, Steve Johnson, announced that while USA Cycling is indeed one of six national governing bodies that is trying to find a new home as the U.S. Olympic Committee decides to tear down one of the buildings that houses these governing bodies there in Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center. Despite all of that, USA Cycling will indeed be staying in Colorado Springs, said Johnson, quote, after more than a year, which included a surprising amount of interest from communities around the country and some remarkable offers, I am proud to announce today that USA Cycling will be staying in Colorado Springs. According to an article I read, they're looking at a 26,000 square foot building in northwest Colorado Springs that will include a conference center, education and training facilities, and office space for more than 60 employees. USA Cycling hopes to move in by November 2008, according to communications director Andy Lee. And finally tonight, for those of you who have the need for speed but perhaps don't have the legs to carry you at the speeds you're interested in, here is a story just for you. There is a gentleman by the name of Robert Maddox who has designed and produced what he calls the world's top pulse jet engine. This is a 50-pound thrust pulse jet engine that he's attached to a bicycle that will allow you to ride your bike at about 75 miles per hour. According to the listing on eBay, which, by the way, as of this recording, is currently at $810, and the bidding ends on May 23rd at 7 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time. The engine specifications are these: thrust of 50 to 60 pounds, weight of 13 pounds, reed valve Argus style, reed valves .008 blue spring, valve cage 6061 T6 aluminum, pipe 304 stainless steel, construction TIG welded CNC milled aluminum, CNC water jet cut parts, fuel consumption half a gallon per minute at full throttle, and the engine has full range of throttle. If you buy it, you're going to need one spark box and one high pressure automotive fuel pump. And then there's a warning: jet engines are dangerous. Buy at your own risk. This engine runs at 140 decibels and glows red cool. If you'd like to see this engine in use on a bicycle, Robert Maddox himself is riding it. I've put a link in the show notes not only to the eBay listing, but also to a YouTube video showing Maddox riding his bike with the jet attached to it. Ride and buy at your own risk. Faster than a speeding bullet, that's going to do it for the news for this edition of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Well, thanks to the folks at Bicycle.net, I got hooked up last week with an interview with Ironman world champion Chris McCormick. I caught up with Chris as he was driving from a Baltimore's International Airport to his hotel as he got ready for a triathlon last weekend in Columbia, Maryland. And you'll hear us talking about that and me wishing him luck. Unfortunately, Chris did not win that triathlon due to the misdirection of a course official. Chris ended up going the wrong way on the course. By the time he figured it out, he ended up getting third place in the race. Nevertheless, Chris is an interesting individual, a great interview, and as I mentioned, the reigning Ironman World Champion. So here is my interview with Chris McCormick, the Ironman World Champion for 2007, as he drove in his rental car with GPS voices blaring in the background. I got a chance to talk to him about his career and about his future. Here's Chris McCormick. I'm talking to triathlon champion Chris McCormack. Chris, how's it going today?
Pretty good. Yeah, really good, actually.
Where are we catching you today?
Oh, I'm in Columbia, Maryland. I just flew up from Los Angeles, and I'm doing a race up here this weekend. My major sponsor is Under Armour, and they're based out of beautiful Baltimore. So I'm up here this weekend.
So which race is that you're doing this weekend?
It's the Columbia, Maryland International Triathlon. It's my first time here, but Under Armour has sponsored it, so it's a big weekend up here for us. So I flew up this morning, and now I'm in my rental car driving to my hotel, so you got me at a good time.
Great, excellent. You know, I've just got a couple of questions first. I know that when you were a kid and when you were in high school, you were an athlete, but not necessarily a triathlete. What got you interested in getting involved in triathlon to begin with?
Actually, you know, I grew up running through school and surfing, and in the 90s, I guess, I was introduced to triathlon primarily because it was, you know, Australia is a pretty warm place, and it's very much a summer sport, and a lot of our surfing culture and our running culture surrounded the beach, because pretty much everyone lives on the beach in Australia. So there's always triathlons on, and I just thought it was really, really cool. You know, I could swim, and I think the attractive thing about triathlon and people that come to this sport, I think that's why it's going so well, is that everybody can relate to one of the disciplines in some way or another. Everyone's swum sometime in their life. Everyone's ridden a bike, whether it was a kid to school or you know, as they got older, they were competitive cyclists, and everyone's run. So it was very attractive to me. I looked at it and thought, this is cool. I thought that, you know, I was 18 at the time, and there was girls running around in costumes and bikinis, and I thought, huh, that's a sport for me. So I started doing it and fell in love with it.
And if you were to choose one of the three, and I know this is tough, but if you were to choose one of the three sports, which one would you say that when you start a race, you're most looking forward to, if any?
The discipline I enjoy the most is cycling. The discipline I'm the best at is running. And that's the beauty about my sport. You're never satisfied with anything, you know, like you have these phenomenal days, but you swim terribly, so you work on your swim. There's always something that you can work on in triathlon, which is what is so attractive about the sport itself. And you know, but I enjoy the cycling culture, and I enjoy riding my bike because I enjoy the journey that you do on a bike ride. But my strengths are definitely in running, and that's where I tend to win a lot of my races.
So if cycling's your favorite, do you think that there's any possibility that someday you might switch or even cross over into professional cycling? Do you think that you could be competitive doing something like that?
I think right now it's not. I'm not really interested in going across to professional cycling, to be honest. But I back when I was younger, I definitely think I could have made a move across in the pro ranks. Of the guys I went through school with, you know, Matty White, who now heads up Chipotle Slipstream. We went to school together. He rode with Lance Armstrong, and you know, I rode with these guys since I was a kid. And you know, I think I could have made the move across to pro cycling when I was a bit younger, but it's just not me. You know, I enjoy triathlon. I enjoy everything about my sport. I enjoy watching cycling, and I enjoy talking to my mates in Europe, Stuart O'Grady and the boys, when they've done the tour and telling me all the stories. But I'm attracted to the lifestyle that's triathlon, and there's a lot of goals and things that I've set for myself within my sport that I want to achieve. You know, cycling's an enjoyable pastime. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy training with the pros. But no, I don't think I'll be turning pro anytime in the near future. But could I turn pro as a youngster? Well, all my tests in the labs say I could. But you know, it's a lot of he say, she say. So I never did. So we can never say what would have happened or what wouldn't.
Well, let me turn that around on you one second. You know, Lance Armstrong left professional cycling. He did the New York City Marathon. I think he was quoted as saying it was one of the toughest things he'd ever done. I've heard a couple of rumors about Lance maybe doing triathlons. What would you think about that? What would your reaction be to Lance Armstrong getting into triathlons?
Well, he started in triathlon. That's my argument. I always, my joke with my pro cycling buddies was he couldn't win a triathlon, yet he went to your sport and won 7 tours.
Right.
And they always have a chuckle about it, but it's, no, I think it'd be, I'd love Lance to come back. I mean, you know, Lance is bigger than cycling. I think what Lance did for cycling was enormous in the United States of America, and to have a celebrity like that who is interested in endurance sports come across, come back to his roots and do triathlon would be wonderful, but I don't think I'd be at all intimidated by Lance Armstrong to Ironman racing. It's a completely different sport. And yeah, you can. I think I'd have as much intimidation of Lance coming across to Ironman triathlon as he would have had I said 5 or 6 years ago I was going to go and ride the Tour de France.
Right.
You know, the guys at the pointy end of triathlon are super, super, super good athletes, and you know a lot of professional cyclists have come across to Ironman. Lauren Jalabert last year came across and did Ironman Hawaii, and you know he's an hour and a half behind the winners, and he's one of the best cyclists of all time. It's a different sport, and you know although we do cycle, the swimming and running inhibit your ability to ride a bike as fast as those guys, and it also puts a lot of upper body muscle on you that is tough to push on a bike. And when those guys start swimming and biking, they realise how tough our sport is, and I would love Lance to come across. I just think it would be phenomenal for my sport, and I know he does follow Ironman racing. A lot of my sponsors still work with Lance or have, and he used to always check the results of Ironman Hawaii because Mark Allen was one of his sporting idols.
Well, let's talk about Ironman Hawaii, because as now a winner of Ironman Hawaii, how did that feel to come across the finish line as a winner, and what do you think? You know, what does that do? What kind of pressure does that put on you for future wins in Kona?
It was a relief more than anything. I think I expected to win the race a lot sooner than I did. It took me 5 years
right.
to finally win in Kona. I went across there in 2002, and, you know, I hadn't been beaten in 3 years, and I just assumed that the same thing had happened in Kona. But it's a very, very special race. The heat, humidity, the conditions make it very different to any other endurance event in the world. It's without question the most difficult one-day test anybody can possibly do, and it's the conditions that make it so hard. And despite being physically, you know, I believe physically one of the best athletes out there, I was always perishing in the humidity. So that event, that one event made me learn more about myself as an athlete than anything else. I had to get into the lab and about my physiology, what made me work in these extreme conditions, and I was able to mature and grow as an athlete and ultimately put together the race that won me last year. And for me, the journey's been the greatest, you know, the journey's been the most enjoyable thing of the whole thing. And I think now I have the key to the lock. Now I know what it takes to win. Now I finally got that title. I think success will be a lot easier. It's a matter of dealing with self-doubt and dealing with issues that racing kind of presents, and it is an incredibly tough event. And if you look at the history of it, only three people have ever defended, and that just shows how difficult the event is.
So how does that feel, being the one guy who has to defend now? What sort of pressure does that put on you? You've been the challenger before. How does it make you feel to be the champion and know that people are trying to unseat you?
Well, I love pressure. So pressure is not a thing that scares me at all. I'm always the outspoken one that likes to put a lot of pressure on himself anyway. It's more dealing with the day, I think, that makes the event enormous. It's dealing with nutrition, dealing with the extremities of heat and wind. And, you know, unlike pro cycling, we don't get guys in cars drive up to us and give us our nutrition and drinks and food. We have to carry all that with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to slow down at aid stations and monitor and of calories we take, because we have to run a marathon after a 112-mile bike ride, and that is the key to success in time. And that marathon's running 100 degrees of heat and 85% humidity, and it's dealing with that is the fear that athletes have. That's the doubt that many people who go to Kona face, and I think it takes people so many years to master that, because you have to learn what makes your how your body ticks in those conditions. So for me, there is no pressure. I think I've got the key now. I know how my body reacts. I know what calorie consumption I need to take. I know the fluids I need to ingest. I know the electrolyte balances I need to have during the event. And I need to monitor those closely on an internal level to maximize my success there. So I enjoy, I'm looking forward to going back there and testing myself again, because it's an addictive rush. It's amazing. It's you suffer like you've never suffered before, and there's times out there where you think, I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to come back here again. But, you know, you cross that finish line there, and it's incredibly satisfying, because it's such an enormous task, and that is what is exciting for me, and that's why I don't feel the pressure about the event at all. I put that pressure on myself, and I expect to be the best I can be, and if I'm the best I can be in Kona, that usually gets me very close to the front.
Yeah. What you talked a lot about nutrition and supplements and things like that. What sorts of advice or tips would you have for people who are training for long distance events, be they running or cycling? What sort of nutrition can you recommend that people consider when they're in training?
It obviously depends on the individual. There's two types of carbohydrates out there. There's a maltodextrin carbohydrate, which is a bit more complex, which I like to use on the bike. It's a more of a slow release carbohydrate, so you don't get that big kick that you get when you have a can of Coke. It's much simpler complexity, and I encourage people who are doing long events to use a maltodextrin based carbohydrate, like a goo or a cliff shot or one of those gels.
Mm-hmm.
And steer clear of the Cokes and the simple sugars until you require them later. Calories are everything. Depending on the conditions, depending on the distance of the race, it's all about counting calories, making sure you're getting the fuel in to carry you to the finish line. And caffeine is a wonderful supplement to use for endurance athletes. I recommend that a lot in any races. It's incredible supplement. I use that. I get that through a lot of my shots. I take the caffeinated shots on the bike, and that really should alert. It keeps caffeine as much for its ability to be used as a fuel and release free fatty acids, but also for your mind, keep you alert, which is what endurance sport is all about, being able to react when you're tired, and caffeine does that very, very well. But
so,
it's a very broad question. It's hard to say, you need to do this or this. It's
right,
variables.
Of course. Yeah.
It's definitely calories. Complex carbohydrates that are easily absorbed, which is the maltodextrin. Caffeine's great, and electrolyte supplements for a salt stick or a hammer electrolyte pill things. Electrolyte. My endurance event on sugar, water, and salt. That's all you need. All the fluff they put in between and the flavors and that is just that, fluff and flavor.
Right. So you mentioned caffeine, which is certainly a legal stimulant, but what about some of the doping testing that's going on in triathlons now? And of course, we've had the issues in professional cycling with doping and with drugs. What's your thought about the testing going on in triathlons, and should there be more? Should there be less? Is it just right?
I think it's fantastic. Triathletes are probably, a lot of us are, we're very, very well tested, and I think it's done because this is a privately run, so the race directors demand there's too much tarnish on an event if athletes go positive, and that's why in triathlon there's been very, very minimal, there have been a couple, but very, very minimal doping offences. The testing's very, very high. We're tested at every event we do. We're tested in and out of competition. I think it's wonderful. I can only speak for the Australians and the Americans. I know what's happening there because I live in this country, and I know how much you're tested here and how much we're tested in Australia. Testing is a good thing. I think the more tests, the better. I understand it's expensive, but doping should be ousted. It's been a cancer in the sport of cycling. It's really caused that sport a lot of issues, especially within Europe. And triathlon's been the beneficiary of that. We've captured a lot of the sponsors that have walked away from cycling and said, we don't want anything to do with that, and come to my sport. But I'm a passionate cyclist. I think it's terrible, and it's a cancer that needs to be sorted and fixed. And I think the only way to do that is more testing and harsher punishments for offenders. And I'm all for lifetime bans. You want to cheat, you're out. Like, and I think that should be brought in. And that's my whole run on the thing. But I'm very happy with the testing within my sport. It's very, very well done. And I think that's why, like I said, the doping offences are at a minimal within my sport, because you get caught too easy.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. You know, so you mentioned that you're traveling to this race today. You had this long flight from Southern California to the East Coast. What does a normal training week look like for you? I mean, you've got all that traveling to do, but you've also got to stay in shape. How much time do you get to train when you're in the middle of your season?
Well, this week's been a bit scattered. I sent my family went home to Australia on Tuesday, so we had to pack up our condo in LA, and they went back, and then so this week's been a little bit scattered. But you know, now we're moving into my season. I've had a really good base work out there in LA. I've been living in those Santa Monica Mountains on the bike, and the swimming's been exceptional, and the running's been fantastic. So the base is definitely there, and now it's racing season. And I tend to use a lot of these cases as cyclists do, to push myself into form. I had a great event 2 weeks ago at the Wildflower Triathlon. Had a win there in my first big race of the season, and this is a shorter event, a two-hour race this weekend, which will prep my speed up before I go to Europe and take on the Ironman in Germany. So these events, it's great. It worked perfectly because I'm on the road, so I use the event as a big hit out, and I didn't need to do a heavy week of work this week, so I was tapering a little bit. And then as I head off to Hawaii in Europe, I'll do some heavy blocks of work. And I tend to swim about 20 miles a week. I'm riding anywhere between 400 and 500 miles on the bike, and I run 80 miles a week. So it's, you know, depending upon where I am in my racing season, but that tends to be the average.
Now, that's a lot of training. I'm guessing that afterwards, you probably have, I don't know, doctors, masseuses. How does that work for you?
I have a lot of massage therapists all around the world. I have a guy out of LA. We have a guy in Europe that I work with, and a guy in Australia. I attend with the same massage therapist. I have a great massage therapist in Boulder. I think massage is the key for me. I tend to get 3 a week. As I'm getting older, the more is better. Principle, and you know, it's just, I think as I've got older, I've been on the circuit now for 12 years as a professional, and you learn. I've got homes away from home. I've got a base in Europe, in Switzerland, that I tend to spend a lot of time at. It's very, very familiar to me. I know my way around, and I have a base now here in the US in Los Angeles, and I know my way around, and then I head to Boulder in the summer, and it's the same in Australia. And once you know, once you're familiar with areas, it's very, very easy to settle. It's difficult when you're very transient and you're, you know, 2 weeks here and 3 weeks there. The key to success on the international circuit within my sport, and I think within any sport, is having primary bases around the world where you do the majority of your training out of. And I found that here in the States, and I found that in Europe, which has been a big key to my success, I think.
Sure. Being in places where you don't have to use GPSs to get around, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now you can hear my GPS right now. I don't have a clue where I am, but this amazing device is telling me I'm pulling up at my hotel, which is wonderful.
Well, then let me just ask you 2 more questions then, so that I don't take up your time since you're pulling up and you've got to get ready for a race tomorrow. But did I read somewhere that you've got at least a healthy fear of sharks? And if so, how does that affect your ocean swims?
Yeah, there was, growing up in Australia, we grew up with sharks. And, you know, when I first came here to the U.S., swimming down in San Diego, I used to ask if there was sharks down that way, and everyone told me definitely not, no sharks in San Diego.
Yeah, we learned differently recently, didn't we?
Yeah, unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, we lost a triathlete who was out training in Solana Beach, San Diego. He's part of the San Diego Tri Club, and, you know, it was a horrible, horrible thing, a horrible death. But, you know, I have a shark phobia, a massive shark phobia, so I am definitely apprehensive about sharks. But, you know, it's just part of the part and parcel of swimming in the sea.
So you just get in there and you go, and you just don't think about what might be down there beneath you, huh?
Yeah, well, a lot of the time I try to swim with weaker swimmers, so I don't have to out swim the shark. I just have to out swim the other guy.
There you go. Well, listen. Last question I've got is I know that you were inducted into the Australian Triathlon Hall of Fame, and I'm sure that was just a great honor. Tell me just a little bit about how that felt.
Oh, it was wonderful. It's amazing because that the Australian Ironman event was, when I was a kid, that was the event I used to go up and watch. And a lot of the old triathlon stars, Paul Akira, Mark Allen, and these guys used to race that event. So when I was, you know, 14, 15 years of age, I was traveling up with my friends and we were watching this race. And, you know, now I'm older and I won it a few to five times. And to be inducted in the Hall of Fame and to have my name next to those guys that I had posters of on my wall when I was a kid was just a complete and utter honour. And, you know, it's amazing how quick, you know, when they contacted me and said, we've nominated you for Hall of Fame status and you've been inducted, I was like, wow, am I that old? You know, it's amazing how fast your career goes. You know, I'm 35 and you know, I have three more years left of racing, and I cannot believe that, you know, I was 14 years of age. It was 20 years ago that I was going up watching these guys race around that course, and now I've had my time there, won five titles, and now I'm inducted into the Hall of Fame there. It's just, it was a true honour. It's amazing, and it's just great that I get a lot of emails and messages from home from a lot of the young guys, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids who I've inspired, and hopefully, you know, my results there and my time racing at home has inspired them to come over and chase their dreams over here in the United States and become professional triathletes, because it's an incredible lifestyle, a great sport, and I've made lifelong friends and seen the world. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's been phenomenal.
Well, that's great. Well, Chris, look, good. Thank you very much for your time. Good luck this weekend, and good luck with the rest of your season. We will be watching, especially as Kona approaches, to see how you do there. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris McCormick. I enjoyed talking to him. I probably could have talked to him all day, but of course he arrived at his hotel and he needed to get in and get some rest for that race. Well, I am recording this show on, well, late in the evening on May the 21st. Now, May the 21st, for those of you who aren't aware, is the evening when many of us took part in Rides of Silence, not only around the country, but around the world. And the Ride of Silence is the opportunity to join with fellow cyclists to pay tribute and to honor those cyclists who we've known and even those that we haven't known who have been injured or killed on the roadways as they rode their bikes. It is a very somber and silent, of course, event that occurs all across the world. And my question to you is this: did you participate in a Ride of Silence? And if so, would you be willing to share your experience in participating in the Ride of Silence with your fellow Fredcast listeners? If so, go onto the website, www.thefredcast.com, find all of the links, especially those for leaving a voicemail, because I want to hear from you in your own words. Whether you're going to email me a wave or an MP3 file in your own words, in your own voice, telling me about your participation in the Ride of Silence, or whether you're going to leave me a voicemail on Skype or on our voicemail line, whatever it is, I want to hear from you in your own words. Did you participate in a Ride of Silence? And what was that experience like? It's one thing for me to tell you about my experience in the Ride of Silence, but I want to hear about yours. Please send in your messages, send them in the next couple of days so we can get them on the next episode of the Fredcast and share those experiences with your fellow Fredcast listeners. Thanks so much in advance for doing it. Next up, I've got an upcoming ride to tell you about, but this time, instead of talking to you about participation in the ride, because I think I've talked about this ride 2 years in a row, it's the Horribly Hilly Hundreds, which takes place in Southwest Wisconsin, offering 100K or 200K distances, each offering 5,700 feet or 10,700 feet, respectfully, in elevation gain. This ride takes place Saturday, June 14th, 2008, and instead of talking to you about participation, because I've done that year after year, now I'm going to talk to you about volunteering. You see, HHH is looking for volunteers this year. And if you will go to their website, and of course, I've put a link in the show notes as well as into the enhanced episode of the podcast, go to their website and sign up as a volunteer, because for those of us who participate in group rides, we know how important those volunteers are, whether it's to drive a SAG, whether it's to cut oranges or make peanut butter and jelly or turkey sandwiches, or to pass out water, or just to provide moral support when you really need it the most as you're approaching that top of that climb, or to make sure that you don't miss a turn. Volunteers are valued by cyclists participating in these events. So if you're participating in the event, that's great. See if you can't find a volunteer to help out. If you can't participate this year, consider volunteering yourself. Once again, links are in the show notes. One of the things that I talk about occasionally on the Fredcast is that this really is a community. You are really a community. You don't just listen to the Fredcast. You write posts on the blog. You tell your friends about the show. You send me emails, and you support the show in many different ways. But beyond the Fredcast community, one of the great things about cycling that I've found is that we live in a community of cyclists. I think that there's probably more bloggers about cycling than there are perhaps about any other sport. People are just passionate. Cycling really is a lifestyle. And those of us that are cyclists tend to support others who are cyclists, whether it's the guy in Denton, Texas, who, when I had a flat and didn't have a pump or a tube that fit properly in the borrowed bike's rims, he drove up in his car and put my bike on his roof rack and gave me a ride back to my hotel. Or whether it's because you see somebody with a flat and you've got a pump in the back of your car and you stop and help them out. No matter what it is, we tend to help each other out as cyclists. And that's the reason for this final portion of tonight's show. Because there's a cyclist that I know and that many of you know whose family is battling something that we all hope that we never have to deal with. I'm talking about Eldon Nelson, also known as Fat Cyclist. And if you haven't read his blog, I highly recommend that you do. Eldon is a very talented writer, and he has a way of conveying his love of cycling to you in a way that just makes you want to strap on your helmet and get out and ride. Well, besides being able to convey accurately the emotions and the feelings that we all experience when we ride, lately, and for quite some time, Eldon has been conveying on his blog the emotions that he and his family have been going through as his wife, Susan, has been fighting a courageous battle against cancer. For those of you who read the blog, you know that in the past week or so, Eldon has had to convey not only to his blog readers, but also to his 12 and 14-year-old sons and his twin 6-year-old girls, the news that Susan's cancer has spread, it's metastasized, it is now in her brain, and it has become inoperable brain cancer. You can imagine what it must be like to explain to your children that, mommy won't be there for your wedding. And it has been a very tough time for Eldon, and I'm not ashamed to say that more than a few tears have come down my cheeks as I've been reading his blog posts. But I tell you this because as a community, as I mentioned earlier, I'm looking for your support. Whether that's through your prayers for Susan and for Eldon and for their 4 kids, or whether through your financial support for Eldon and his family. Because of course they have health insurance, but the costs involved with what they're going through go beyond health insurance. So Eldon was selling Fat Cyclist jerseys, and I'm pleased to say how quickly they sold out so that he could take the money that he was earning from those jerseys and put it into what he calls his Susan Win Fund. But there are other ways you can support Eldon as well. And so I encourage you to go to fatcyclist.com. Of course, there's a link in the show notes. And whether that's through a PayPal donation or any other way that you feel that you can support Eldon, somebody in our cycling family, in our cycling community, who's going through a rough time and could use the support of fellow cyclists, I urge you to do that. Again, whether that's through your financial support, whether that's through messages of support to Eldon and his family, or simply through your prayers, I hope that you will do as I am doing and support Eldon and Susan through this very difficult time in their lives. I wish them all the best, and I know that you do too. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Fredcast. Before I go and before I give you our PodSafe cycling music for the week, just wanted to go over a couple of ways that you can contact the show. Perhaps my favorite these days is via Twitter. Twitter is simply put a messaging service that provides you with 140 character messages that simply say, "What are you doing now?" And it is a great way to keep in touch with the Fredcast. There are several ways that you can find the Twitter feed. You can go to twitter.com/Fredcast, and you can sign up there to get text messages to your cell phone or simply to your computer to follow what's going on with the Fredcast. Or you can send a message, text message, to 40404 with the words "follow Fredcast," and then you will get all of my Twitter messages right on your cell phone. Remember, normal text messaging rates do apply. Of course, you can always use email. My email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can use that for text comments or, of course, audio comments like I mentioned earlier on the show. Just go ahead and enclose those and send them off to thefredcast@gmail.com. There are a number of other ways that you can send audio comments. Of course, you can use our listener hotline, area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373. The Skype username is TheFredcast. And also on the website, there's several other ways that you can use your computer and a microphone to send me a voicemail. Of course, as always, check out our website for show notes and other information about the show at www.thefredcast.com. And before we head out of here, as always, it's time for PodSafe Cycling Music. Great music to listen to while you ride. Tonight's music is a song entitled "Go" by Chris Yale, and I've got links in the show notes to where you can find more information about Chris and also Chris's website. So between this show and next, thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. Thanks for being a great part of the Fredcast and the cycling community. I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Something I don't know, 'cause you were never happy here. I think you made that very clear. Time's getting shorter, and I really think you ought to go. Take your reason, take your rhyme. You don't take your time. Coming from me, this might sound strange. I think it's time you made a change. These days you always look so sad. I like you better when you're glad. Everybody feels your pain. You're driving all your friends insane. Disappear. Take your- time.